Chapter 23. If let alone. Now, we ask, what was there in this cave to cause a departure from the ordinary course of nature? If the body had been kept in its mangled state on shore until Tuesday night, some trace would be found on shore of the murderers. It is a doubtful point, also, whether the body would be so soon afloat, even were it thrown in after having been dead 2 days. And, furthermore, it is exceedingly improbable that any villains who had committed such a murder as is here supposed would have thrown the body in without weight to sink it, when such a precaution could have so easily been taken. The editor here proceeds to argue that the body must have been in the water not 3 days merely, but, at least, 5 times 3 days, because it was so far decomposed that Beauvais had great difficulty in recognizing it. This latter point, however, was fully disproved. I continue the translation. What, then, are the facts on which M. Beauvais says that he has no doubt the body was that of Marie Rogti? He ripped up the gown sleeve and says he found marks which satisfied him of the identity. The public generally supposed those marks to have consisted of some description of scars. He rubbed the arm and found hair upon it, something as indefinite, we think, as can readily be imagined, as little conclusive as finding an arm in the sleeve. M. Beauvais did not return that night, but sent word to Madame Rogti, at 7 o'clock, on Wednesday evening, that an investigation was still in progress respecting her daughter. If we allow that Madame Rogti, from her age and grief, could not go over, which is allowing a great deal, there certainly must have been someone who would have thought it worth while to go over and attend the investigation, if they thought the body was that of Marie. Nobody went over. There was nothing said or heard about the matter in the Rue Pavie Saint-André that reached even the occupants of the same building. M. Saint-Eustache, the lover and intended husband of Marie, who boarded in her mother's house, deposes that he did not hear of the discovery of the body of his intended until the next morning, when M. Beauvais came into his chamber and told him of it. For an item of news like this, it strikes us, it was very coolly received. In this way the journal endeavored to create the impression of an apathy on the part of the relatives of Marie, inconsistent with the supposition that these relatives believed the corpse to be hers. Its insinuations amount to this: that Marie, with the connivance of her friends, had absented herself from the city for reasons involving a charge against her chastity, and that these friends, upon the discovery of a corpse in the Seine, somewhat resembling that of the girl, had availed themselves of the opportunity to impress the public with the belief of her death. But little was again over hasty. It was distinctly proved that no apathy, such as was imagined, existed, that the old lady was exceedingly feeble, and so agitated, as to be unable to attend to any duty, that Saint-Eustache, so far from receiving the news coolly, was distracted with grief, and bore himself so frantically, that M. Beauvais prevailed upon a friend and relative to take charge of him, and prevent his attending the examination at the disinterment. Moreover, although it was stated by Ledel that the corpse was reinterred at the public expense, that an advantageous offer of private sculpture was absolutely declined by the family, and that no member of the family attended the ceremonial. Although, I say, all this was asserted by Ledel in furtherance of the impression it designed to convey, yet all this was satisfactorily disproved. In a subsequent number of the paper, an attempt was made to throw suspicion upon Beauvais himself. The editor says, "Now, then, a change comes over the matter. We are told that on one occasion, while a Madame B was at Madame Rogti's house, M. Beauvais, who was going out, told her that a gendarme was expected there, and she, Madame B, must not say anything to the gendarme until he returned, but let the matter be for him." In the present posture of affairs, M. Beauvais appears to have the whole matter looked up in his head. A single step cannot be taken without M. Beauvais, for, go which way you will, you run against him. For some reason, he determined that nobody shall have anything to do with the proceedings but himself, and he has elbowed the male relatives out of the way, according to their representations, in a very singular manner. He seems to have been very much averse to permitting the relatives to see the body. By the following fact, some color was given to the suspicion thus thrown upon Beauvais. A visitor at his office, a few days prior to the girl's disappearance, and during the absence of its occupant, had observed a rose in the keyhole of the door, and the name Orion scribed upon a slate which hung near at hand. The general impression, so far as we were enabled to glean it from the newspapers, seemed to be that Marie had been the victim of a gang of desperados, that by these he had been borne across the river, maltreated and murdered. Le Commercial, asterisk 11, however, a print of extensive influence, was earnest in combating this popular idea. I quote a passage or two from its columns. We are persuaded that pursuit has hitherto been on a false scent, so far as it has been directed to the Bar Irie du Raoul. It is impossible that a person so well known to thousands as this young woman was, should have passed three blocks without someone having seen her, and anyone who saw her would have remembered it, for she interested all who knew her. It was when the streets were full of people, when she went out. It is impossible that she could have gone to the Bar Irie du Raoul, or to the Rue des Docteurs Mess, without being recognized by a dozen persons. Yet no one has come forward who saw her outside of her mother's door, and there is no evidence, except the testimony concerning her expressed intentions, that she did go out at all. Her gown was torn, bound round her, and tied, and by that the body was carried as a bundle. If the murder had been committed at the Bar Irie du Raoul, there would have been no necessity for any such arrangement. The fact that the body was found floating near the Bar Irie is no proof as to where it was thrown into the water. A piece of one of the unfortunate girl's petticoats, 2 feet long and 1 foot wide, was torn out and tied under her chin around the back of her head, probably to prevent screams. This was done by fellows who had no pocket handkerchief. A day or two before the prefect called upon us, however, some important information reached the police, which seemed to overthrow, at least, the chief portion of Le Commercial's argument. Two small boys, sons of a Madame Delic, while roaming among the woods near the Bar Irie du Raoul, chanced to penetrate a close thicket, within which were three or four large stones, forming a kind of seat, with a back and footstool. On the upper stone lay a white petticoat, on the second a silk scarf. A parasol, gloves, and a pocket handkerchief were also here found. The handkerchief bore the name Arirogti. Fragments of dress were discovered on the brambles around. The earth was trampled, the bushes were broken, and there was every evidence of a struggle. Between the thicket and the river, the fences were found taken down, and the ground bore evidence of some heavy burthen having been dragged along it. A weekly paper, Le Soleil, asterisk 12, had the following comments upon this discovery, comments which merely echoed the sentiment of the whole Parisian press. The things had all evidently been there at least 3 or 4 weeks. They were all mildewed down hard with the action of the rain and stuck together from mildew. The grass had grown around and over some of them. The silk on the parasol was strong, but the threads of it were run together within. The upper part, where it had been doubled and folded, was all mildewed and rotten, and tore on its being opened. The pieces of her frock torn out by the bushes were about 3 inches wide and 6 inches long. One part was the hem of the frock, and it had been mended. The other piece was part of the skirt, not the hem. They looked like strips torn off, and were on the thorn bush, about a foot from the ground. There can be no doubt, therefore, that the spot of this appalling outrage has been discovered. Consequent upon this discovery, new evidence appeared. Madame Delic testified that she keeps a roadside inn not far from the bank of the river, opposite the Bar Irie du Raoul. The neighborhood is secluded particularly so. It is the usual Sunday resort of blackguards from the city, who cross the river in boats. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon of the Sunday in question, a young girl arrived at the inn, accompanied by a young man of dark complexion. The two remained here for some time. On their departure, they took the road to some thick woods in the vicinity. Madame Delic's attention was called to the dress worn by the girl, on account of its resemblance to one worn by a deceased relative. A scarf was particularly noticed. Soon after the departure of the couple, a gang of miscreants made their appearance, behaved boisterously, ate and drank without making payment, followed in the route of the young man and girl, returned to the inn about dusk, and recrossed the river, as if in great haste. It was soon after dark, upon this same evening, that Madame Delic, as well as her eldest son, heard the screams of a female in the vicinity of the inn. The screams were violent but brief. Madame D recognized not only the scarf which was found in the thicket, but the dress which was discovered upon the corpse. An omnibus driver, Valence, *13, now also testified that he saw Marie Rogti cross a ferry on the Seine, on the Sunday in question, in company with a young man of dark complexion. He, Valence, knew Marie, and could not be mistaken in her identity. The articles found in the thicket were fully identified by the relatives of Marie. The items of evidence and information thus collected by myself, from the newspapers, at the suggestion of Dupin, embraced only one more point, but this was a point of seemingly vast consequence. It appears that, immediately after the discovery of the clothes as above described, the lifeless, or nearly lifeless body of Saint Eustache, Marie's betrothed, was found in the vicinity of what all now supposed the scene of the outrage. A phial labeled Audenum, and emptied, was found near him. His breath gave evidence of the poison. He died without speaking. Upon his person, was found a letter, briefly stating his love for Marie, with his design of self-destruction. I need scarcely tell you, said Dupin, as he finished the perusal of my notes, that this is a far more intricate case than that of the Rue Morgue, from which it differs in one important respect. This is an ordinary, although an atrocious instance of crime. There is nothing peculiarly outre about it. You will observe that, for this reason, the mystery has been considered easy, when, for this reason, it should have been considered difficult, of solution. Thus, at first, it was thought unnecessary to offer a reward. The myrmidons of G were able at once to comprehend how and why such an atrocity might have been committed. They could picture to their imaginations a mode many modes and a motive many motives, and because it was not impossible that either of these numerous modes and motives could have been the actual one, they have taken it for granted that one of them must. But the case with which these variable fancies were entertained, and the very plausibility which each assumed, should have been understood as indicative rather of the difficulties than of the facilities which must attend elucidation. I have before observed that it is by prominences above the plane of the ordinary that reason feels her way, if at all, in her search for the true, and that the proper question in cases such as this is not so much what has occurred, as what has occurred that has never occurred before, in the investigations at the house of Madame L'Espanaye, *14, the agents of G were discouraged and confounded by that very unusualness which, to a properly regulated intellect, would have afforded the surest omen of success, while this same intellect might have been plunged in despair at the ordinary character of all that met the eye in the case of the perfumery girl, and yet told of nothing but easy triumph to the functionaries of the prefecture. In the case of Madame L'Espanaye and her daughter there was, even at the beginning of our investigation, no doubt that murder had been committed. The idea of suicide was excluded at once. Here too, we are freed, at the commencement, from all supposition of self-murder. The body found at the Bar Irie du Raoul was found under such circumstances as to leave us no room for embarrassment upon this important point. But it has been suggested that the corpse discovered, is not that of the Marirogti for the conviction of whose assassin, or assassins, the reward is offered, and respecting whom, solely, our agreement has been arranged with the prefect. We both know this gentleman well. It will not do to trust him too far. If, dating our inquiries from the body found, and thence tracing a murderer, we yet discover this body to be that of some other individual than Marie, or, if starting from the living Marie, we find her, yet find her unassassinated, in either case we lose our labor, since it is Monsieur G with whom we have to deal. For our own purpose, therefore, if not for the purpose of justice, it is indispensable that our first step should be the determination of the identity of the corpse with the Marie Rogti who is missing. With the public the arguments of Legault have had weight, and that the journal itself is convinced of their importance, would appear from the manner in which it commences one of its essays upon the subject. Several of the morning papers of the day, apostrophe it says, speak of the conclusive article in Monday's Edel. Apostrophe apostrophe to me, this article appears conclusive of little beyond the zeal of its editor. We should bear in mind that, in general, it is the object of our newspapers rather, to create a sensation, to make a point than to further the cause of truth. The latter end is only pursued when it seems coincident with the former. The print which merely falls in with ordinary opinion, however well-founded this opinion may be, earns for itself no credit with the mob. The mass of the people regard as profound only him who suggests pungent contradictions of the general idea. In ratiocination, not less than in literature, it is the epigram which is the most immediately and the most universally appreciated. In both, it is of the lowest order of merit. What I mean to say is, that it is the mingled epigram and melodrama of the idea that Marie Rogti still lives, rather than any true plausibility in this idea, which have suggested it to Legault, and secured it a favorable reception with the public. Let us examine the heads of this journal's argument, endeavoring to avoid the incoherence with which it is originally set forth. The first aim of the writer is to show, from the brevity of the interval between Marie's disappearance and the finding of the floating corpse, that this corpse cannot be that of Marie. The reduction of this interval to its smallest possible dimension becomes thus, at once, an object with the reasoner. In the rash pursuit of this object, he rushes into mere assumption at the outset. It is folly to suppose, apostrophe he says, that the murder, if murder was committed on her body, could have been consummated soon enough to have enabled her murderers to throw the body into the river before midnight. Apostrophe apostrophe we demand at once, and very naturally, why? Why is it folly to suppose that the murder was committed within 5 minutes after the girl's quitting her mother's house? Why is it folly to suppose that the murder was committed at any given period of the day? There have been assassinations at all hours. But, had the murder taken place at any moment between 9 o'clock in the morning of Sunday and a quarter before midnight, there would still have been time enough to throw the body into the river before midnight. Apostrophe apostrophe this assumption, then, amounts precisely to this, that the murder was not committed on Sunday at all, and, if we allow Legault to assume this, we may permit it any liberties whatever. The paragraph beginning it is folly to suppose that the murder, etc., apostrophe however it appears as printed in Legault, may be imagined to have existed actually thus in the brain of its editor. It is folly to suppose that the murder, if murder was committed on the body, could have been committed soon enough to have enabled her murderers to throw the body into the river before midnight. It is folly, we say, to suppose all this, and to suppose at the same time, as we are resolved to suppose, that the body was not thrown in until after midnight, a sentence sufficiently inconsequential in itself, but not so utterly preposterous as the one printed. Were it my purpose, continued Dupin, merely to make out a case against this passage of Legault's argument, I might safely leave it where it is. It is not, however, with Legault that we have to do, but with the truth. The sentence in question has but one meaning, as it stands, and this meaning I have fairly stated. But it is material that we go behind the mere words for an idea which these words have obviously intended and failed to convey. It was the design of the journalist to say that, at whatever period of the day or night of Sunday this murder was committed, it was improbable that the assassins would have ventured to bear the corpse to the river before midnight. And herein lies, really, the assumption of which I complain. It is assumed that the murder was committed at such a position, and under such circumstances, that the bearing it to the river became necessary. Now, the assassination might have taken place. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.